In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive.
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator.
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town Podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. We give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Every Town Podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, investigating the attempted coup against the president.
Now we have the irony of a group of people bound and determined to find President Trump guilty of obstruction of justice. And now what are they doing? They are committing acts of obstruction of justice far more clear than the rather ethereal theories that they come up with in the Mueller report.
If you enjoy Conspiracy Unlimited, why not become a Conspiracy Unlimited Plus member? For just $1.99 per month, you'll gain access to two bonus, exclusive, commercial-free episodes per month, plus access to my back catalog of episodes. That's over 350 episodes. To subscribe, just go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Gain Access to Premium Episodes. Again, go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Get Access to Premium Episodes, or click on the link in the episode notes. Conspiracy Unlimited Plus for less than $2 per month. Why not sign up today?
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. pursuing the truth wherever it leads, exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites, revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, here's Richard Serrett.
Welcome to your Wednesday. Attorney author John O'Connor returns to the program to discuss the DOJ's ongoing investigation of Operation Crossfire Hurricane, the FBI's fraudulent investigation into alleged Russian collusion in the Trump campaign. We'll talk about the recent revelation that more than 24 cell phones belonging to members of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's team were wiped clean of their data before the Justice Department's Inspector General could check them. We'll also talk about former Washington Post journalist Bob Woodward's latest book, Rage, in which he alleges President Trump downplayed the coronavirus pandemic. John O'Connor is an experienced trial lawyer practicing law in San Francisco. He's tried cases in state and federal court throughout the country. He served as an assistant U.S. attorney in Northern California, representing the United States in both criminal and civil cases. Among his interesting assignments was representing Mark Felt regarding the revelation of his identity as Deep Throat. He's the author of Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. Hey, John, welcome back to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
Good to talk to you again, Richard. Yeah.
About a week ago, we found out that members of Mueller's investigative team that were investigating the supposed Russian collusion, they were to turn in their phones, and it turns out dozens of them were wiped. In some cases, they claimed accidentally. In other cases, they were returned to factory settings, as in the case of Lisa Page. What's going on over there?
Well, Richard, I think it's really, really interesting, just by way of background, when all this is going on and the people that are investigating collusion, for example, in the government are actually colluding with Russians themselves in the Steele dossier, which is all Russian disinformation. Now we have the irony of a group of people bound and determined to find President Trump guilty of obstruction of justice. And now, what are they doing? They are committing acts of obstruction of justice far more clear than the rather ethereal theories that they come up with in the Mueller report. This is flat-out obstruction. There's another question, and we can talk about it later, as to whether there can be proof of intentionality beyond a reasonable doubt. But they are clearly obstructing justice. The timing of this is so clear that it is after Horowitz, it may not be Horowitz, but whoever it is had located the texts of Page and Stroke. And I think Horowitz was on the case at the time and was beginning to look into this. Once that happened, all of a sudden everybody's phones get wiped. So the timing of this would suggest, of course, number one, concerted action by these folks, which they would gladly say was conspiracy in the case of Trump. And number two, they're conspiring to obstruct justice, because any investigation that has been opened, or as they say in the Mueller report, is anticipated to be opened in the near future. It need not be a formal investigation at the time, but any sense that there is an ongoing investigation, which I think there was, now you have an investigation. So you have a predicate investigation. You have a link to the investigation that is needed to have obstruction of justice. You have to have something to obstruct. So what they're doing is they're obstructing the IG's investigation very
now,
clearly.
Would those phones, would there have been a subpoena issued for those phones? Would there have been a preservation of evidence order issued?
No, I don't think so. But as noted in the special counsel's report, in the Mueller report, you don't need that. You don't need that for obstruction. As a matter of fact, if your audience would look in the Mueller report, they would see that when they're trying to get Trump for obstructing when he fired Comey. And in Comey, there was no, quote, proceeding, unquote, being carried out. The Russian counterintelligence investigation, a counterintelligence investigation is not a proceeding. But they said that, gee, if he thought, and I agree with this, if he thought that there might be a criminal investigation coming up that might be opened in the future, that could be obstruction. And that's a correct statement of the law. You can obstruct, for instance, you can hide evidence before the sheriff actually starts asking you questions. Okay, that's obstruction of justice. Now it was very tenuous in the case of the Comey firing. I mean, it's just a bunch of nonsense. He fired Comey because he didn't like him. But and he wouldn't announce that Trump was not a target, but it had nothing to do with the criminal proceeding. Now, in this case, there was a proceeding. It need not be a criminal one. It could be just an administrative investigation. So there was clearly a tether to an investigation. I don't think there's any doubt about it. So the only question is, for your audience, let me make this clear. What you have to find for a criminal act is an intentional act with, that is to say, an act with criminal intent, proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, is O.J. Simpson guilty of killing his wife? According to the jury, not beyond a reasonable doubt, but according to another jury, yes, by a preponderance of the evidence, and to get punitive damages, yes, by clear and convincing evidence. So my point is there are various standards of proof that are applicable. So I think clearly, and I've been thinking about this, that they are guilty of intentionally destroying their phones for the purpose of evading investigation. And now the only question is, can you prove it beyond a reasonable doubt? I think it's going to be tough because I think each one of these people will lie. They're smart people. When they did it, they knew they would have their stories. And so now, is it provable by a preponderance of the evidence? I would say so. So in any kind of civil proceeding, it's provable. Now, can it be proven criminally? Somebody's going to have to break, frankly, Richard. The evidence almost gets to a criminal conviction, but if I were a prosecutor, I'd say I'm probably not going to get a conviction, especially in the District of Columbia, where, you know, 90%, 80% of the people are registered Democrats. It's going to be a tough sell into a jury there.
You're just getting stymied at every turn here, but it seems, I mean, here we have investigators that would have been trained in handling evidence. Their own phones contain evidence, and yet they accidentally wipe them or accidentally reset them to factory settings. Is that what we're led to believe? It strains all credulity.
Well, it certainly does. No, you can't believe it. That's why I say it's clearly provable. You could go into court tomorrow and prove this case to a jury by a preponderance of the evidence when, you know, the normal cases when you bring in court civil cases. Can you say, and the jury would probably think that in the criminal case, let's say there are, I don't know how many people are involved in all this. I've heard 27 phones. I'm not sure how many and how many people are involved, but let's say there are 20 lawyers involved. I don't know. Let's say there are 20 lawyers. I think the jury's going to think, well, at least 18 of them probably did it on purpose. The problem is, you know, there might be somebody in there who actually you can't believe. And which one is it? It's like an Agatha Christie novel. Who's rather than who's guilty, who's innocent? And so it is. It strains all credulity. They did it all at the same time. And after they had uncovered the stroke text page, stroke page texts.
375 of them, actually.
Right. And all of this wiping of the phones, all of this destruction took concerted effort and was all done at the same time. In order to wipe your phone, I mean, I've put in my wrong passcode several times in my old age, but I've never quite done it 10 times in a row, and I've never had my phone wiped. I just now find out that would happen. But you have to go out of your way to wipe a phone with those things. And then you also have to intentionally put things back to factory settings. So the suspicion is high, and especially given the timing that all did it simultaneously, the suspicion is very high, and I think, again, if it's not beyond a reasonable doubt, it's certainly, we would all say it's probably even clear and convincing, which is kind of an additional standard. It's by clear and convincing evidence these people obstructed justice, right as they are assigned by our country to be investigating obstruction of justice. They're committing an act far more heinous, far more clear, far more palpable than anything President Trump did. Think of this for irony. You know, in a case in which there's far more connections with the Russians and Russian insiders and Russian information to help one candidate on the side of Hillary Clinton than on the side of Donald Trump, but yet they're investigating President Trump, then they're investigating him for obstruction, and they're obstructing far more clearly than he is. I mean, you can't make this up, Richard. This is just really amazing.
Right, right. And I know that at the risk of beating a dead horse, but, you know, again, Hillary Clinton, in this case, she was subpoenaed, and yet she, you know, her 30,000 emails destroyed using bleach bit, phones willfully and destroyed with, you know, with hammers. How is she able to walk on that?
Well, what they did was, and this again is all an inside job, which our watchdog press decided they would be a lapdog once more. They might have taken sleeping pills at the time. But what Comey did was, and the other people in the Justice Department, I guess it, I'm not sure who the Attorney General was at the time, but they gave the people who actually did the destruction, they gave them immunity. But they did not require them to roll over on the people who told them to do it. And so I'm not sure what answers they gave, but they did not roll over, and they got immunity. So Clinton, you could not prove that she had ordered them to destroy this stuff. And also, of course, she also said somewhat, you know, tendentiously that, you know, that the only thing on those emails were, you know, her yoga stuff and things about her daughter's wedding. It's hard to believe that. But yet it was after a subpoena was issued, and as soon as the subpoena is issued, boom. Now, it just so happens that on those emails would be emails that she would be sending and receiving in her capacity as a state, as Secretary of State, gosh, right about the time that the Clinton Foundation was getting $145 million in contributions from people closely associated with Uranium One, which was the vehicle which Vladimir Putin purchased to take control of the world's uranium, in which he has the, you know, the Titans grip on right now. He has very, very strong strategic advantage because of what Hillary Clinton did there to get that $145 million. And those texts, those messages, email messages and so forth, would probably shed light on her attitudes toward the Uranium One sale and what she was seeking and what she wanted and so forth, what she knew. And that's not the only thing, of course, that would be involved in those. And there are probably many things like that, but on a lower scale. But so yet we let her get away with that. And that's because our press just does not want to watch. If the press was outraged and shone light on this, then there would have been an investigation. They wouldn't have been able to get these people, you know, immunity. And we would actually have something. But we didn't. And so she got away once again with a felony. It's amazing how many felonies she's gotten away with. People may forget that in the her husband's contretemps, she was the one that was really the most guilty party. And the country was so exhausted by the Clinton impeachment proceedings that by the time Robert Ray was appointed to be the successor special counsel, independent counsel after Kenneth Starr, he, on the urging of everybody, just sort of dropped all the stuff against Hillary Clinton, but issued a very good report in which you read it and you say, okay, she's guilty of probably three felonies here at least from the Robert Ray report. Anybody can read it. It's a public document. So she got away with felonies there. There's no doubt about it. She lied under oath to Congress. She had helped defraud the FDIC as a lawyer for Jim McDougal, who had a phony SNL, and she did all kinds of stuff corruptly and then lied about it. And she said she just didn't remember working on this case. So she has a long list of felonies that she's gotten away with. And it's really, really terrible because our press just doesn't do much about it.
Well, in running interference for Hillary over the emails, were they not also protecting President Obama? Because we know from FBI records he used a pseudonym in email communications with Hillary on her private server, although despite claiming he knew nothing about her private server.
Well, that's right. He clearly lied about that. But I think what he was worried about with these emails, and one of the reasons that he probably sanctioned this sweetheart deal, was that he would be embarrassed on a lot of other things. For instance, Benghazi. What would the emails say about his knowledge of what was happening in Benghazi? Would they reveal that he knew exactly what had happened? Of course. So meanwhile, knowing this and probably shown and buttressed by Hillary's emails, he had Susan Rice go on five Sunday morning talk shows and lie through her teeth. Now, she's an extension of Obama, of course. So things like that, we would show that he was lying about these things. And I think it's, and sure, he did lie about not knowing about that Hillary had a private server. But that's the least of his offenses here, I think, that would have that he was worried about.
I want to move over to Bob Woodward's much anticipated sequel to his book Fear, which was about Trump in the White House in 2018. This one is called Rage and published just on the 15th of this month. And people making a big stink about revelations in that book regarding Trump and downplaying coronavirus and so forth. Just give me your impressions of the book and so forth.
Well, as you and I have talked about before, Richard, Woodward was decidedly dishonest in his Watergate reporting, where he made his mark, not by saying anything flat out that was incorrect, but more by concealment. And he conceals and moves things around and slants them so that while he seemingly is telling the truth, he's really concealing and lying. Now, in this case, his primary charge, put down to a nub, is that President Trump hid from the American people the lethality or deadliness of the virus. That's the charge. And yet, going back, let me take you through this. Early February, after Trump bans travel and then has a strong statement in the State of the Union, Joe Biden and the other Democrats, including Nancy Pelosi, are accusing him of fear-mongering. Now, was the country, the real question is, was the country fooled or lulled into submission thinking this virus was not deadly? Au contraire, because of Trump's action and because of the people under him that were working, the public was well aware of the dangers as a matter, so much so that the public health people thought that they were overestimating the lethality, and they were. Remember, when Nancy Pelosi went to Chinatown on February 24th, now let's go to February 24th, not a death yet in the country, she is encouraging people to come to Chinatown. Why? Why does she need to do that? Not just for fun, but because the whole country is afraid of the Chinese virus, and they're especially afraid of getting near a Chinese person or eating Chinese food. That's because the country is really on edge. Now, I have in my hands, or I had in my hands right near me, a study that was done by the Stanford School of Medicine, Department of Public Health, commissioned by an international agency, a wonderful study of the attitudes of the people, which is an important component of public health. What did the country know about the virus from February 23rd to March 3rd? This is before anything had happened, there was any outbreak. First death, February 29th, in a nursing home in Seattle. What did the country know? The country thought that the virus would kill 5% of the people it got. And the study criticized it because the public was overestimating the lethality. because the lethality was known as 2%, and the study said, well, really, it's probably under 1% if you take into account asymptomatic and unreported cases, which is true, which is the way it is. So the country overestimated it. The country knew that the disease, that the problem would come from airborne saliva. They knew that. They knew you were not supposed to touch your eyes, nose, mouth, and so forth. The country thought masks would help, even though the public health community derided that as being false at the time. But they thought masks were good. And but everyone knew about social distancing. Now, this is all before. And the real danger was, as this study shows, is that people were almost too much on edge. They were too worried about it. Because that's not good for public health either, to overestimate something. So let me take you through it then. February 29th, the first person dies in Seattle. We're all on edge. March 10, 11 people have died. Trump says, look, just stay calm. He's trying to keep people calm. Stay calm. Maybe this will eventually go away. Maybe he's too optimistic there. But 3 days later, March 13th, by that point, there is a run on the supermarkets for toilet paper and wipes, and I think water too, but toilet paper and wipes. Trump declares a national emergency on March 13th, closes down the cruise lines, and the schools and libraries are closed. March 15th, he closes down the entire country. Now, New York does not follow suit right away. They allow bars to serve out on the street. There are these massive gatherings in New York. But Trump has shut things down. So people were not lulled into submission at all. Quite the contrary. And it's the Democrats who were telling people, oh, everything's going to be okay, mainly because of their commercial base. So to say that Trump did this is absolutely wrong. And Bob Woodward is committing a cardinal sin of public health by sowing doubt in one of our messengers of public health. Like Trump or not, he is a guy that is a public health messenger. So what do? You say, oh, gosh, everything he said was wrong. Well, it's Woodward who's deceiving us once again. It's not Trump. He's the public health deceiver. Woodward is. It is not Trump. And you look back at that record. Now, what was uncertain was the spread, the rate of spread. No one knew what the rate of spread would be. We got no good information from China. We were living in the dark. Anthony Fauci has stated that Trump said nothing that was incorrect. Fauci was on the record early in March saying, it's too early. We can't do anything yet. We shouldn't panic and shut everything down. That's exactly what Trump was saying. He was on message. And then when things looked like they were going to get bad, we shut everything down. So did Trump do anything wrong? No. And is Woodward being deceptive? Yes.
More of my conversation with John O'Connor when Conspiracy Unlimited returns.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, one strange thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I am a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
I can't stop talking about the pomegranate super tea from my friends at Get the Tea. They actually changed the name. It used to be known as Formula 13 Pomegranate Cleansing Tea, but this gentle cleansing tea now contains a new, stronger formula. All I know is it still tastes great, it's still refreshing, and it still provides me with energy and a sense of well-being. This new blend of tea contains some of the same ingredients as those that are in the Life Change teas, but with added natural pomegranate flavor and stevia to give it a natural, slightly sweetened taste. One pouch of tea contains 8 tea bags, enough to last for 1 month. I brew 2 gallons at a time and then it steeps in cold water. Into the fridge it goes, and that's enough to last for the week. I start my day every day with a 16-ounce cool, refreshing glass of this amazing herbal, non-GMO, caffeine-free tea. It provides a daily gentle cleanse that rids my body of any intruders. A healthy gut is the key to a healthy body. So, come on board and find out for yourself. The Super Tea also comes in peppermint. These teas are not available in any store. Use the code UNLIMITED and all your orders ship for free. Get your tea from GetTheTea.com.
If there's one thing money can't buy, it's sanity. Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
John O'Connor, the author of Postgate, is here, and we were discussing Bob Woodward's book Rage, the follow-up to Fear, Trump in the White House. If it was so explosive, so damning, that what Trump was doing by downplaying, as he claims, why would he sit on that information until publication date? Why wouldn't he, you know, be going on all the chat shows saying the president is downplaying this?
Well, because here's what he was downplaying. He was downplaying the panic because people were panicking, because it wasn't as though there was some secret that was being withheld from the American public. Quite the contrary. If Woodward were to come out and said, boy, this stuff is deadly, Trump told me it was deadly. Well, what I'm telling you is the public already knew that. It's established in spades. There is no doubt about it. For anyone curious enough to look, the guy's name is Geldsetzer. Dr. Geldsetzer conducted this 3,000-person study, and other people talked about the same thing. There was a tremendous panic within the country about this before a death had happened. So what would have happened if Woodward would have said, that's what they're asking now, because the mainstream press is so idiotic that they're not even investigating what it was that supposedly was this big dark secret. If Bob Woodward would have come out in early February and said, boy, this stuff is really lethal. Boy, it's lethal. And Trump's not telling you that. Guess what? What the public would have done is said, we already know that. We're already scared out of our wits. That's why we're buying wipes and toilet paper. And we're afraid to talk to Chinese people. And that is the truth. That's one of the things that people worried about, is the public panicking too much.
Right.
Trump talked about this in his State of the Union address on February 4.
Right.
He said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to try to keep you safe. This is a terrible virus, but we're going to try to keep you safe. Do you think he was hiding anything? By the way, I banned travel from China. A little while later, he bans it from Europe. So the idea that there was something he was hiding that Bob Woodward could have told us is ridiculous. What Woodward did was he waited long enough so that not only is there an election, but in the miasma of memory, we don't remember exactly the timing of what we knew when. And so people want to latch onto this thing. Oh, Trump didn't tell us something. Just not true. It's just not true.
And the Democrats, right? Yeah. And the Democrats apparently were so upset or so worried about it that they were wrapped up in impeachment hearings rather than rallying around the flag and trying to to help the situation.
Right. On March 9th, there's a really good clip of Biden at a rally on March 9th going around hugging people. This is when everybody knows that social distancing is what you should be doing, and that large gatherings were not a good idea. We already knew this before we shut down the country. So there's a great clip. There are great clips of Biden going out in his one of his rallies and just hugging everybody as he always does, and he seems to be and like you say, Nancy Pelosi also. So they were more concerned about impeaching Trump than protecting the country, and they tried to say that Trump was trying to distract attention from his impeachment by this stupid fear-mongering on this virus. Now the story flips. Now the messaging is completely different. Let's forget about the impeachment. Let's forget about what we were saying. Let's forget about what the Democrats were saying. By the way, de Blasio and Cuomo were really big on keeping New York open. They thought this was just terrible. After Trump shuts down the country, de Blasio tells everybody to go to bars. I encourage you to go to bars. He said it on March 15th after Trump had declared a national emergency 2 days later, 3 days later, before. So the hypocrisy, of course, is terrible, and everything relies on the American public having the memory of chipmunks, and if you go to CNN and MSNBC, it's just a bunch of hysteria without any analysis. What did we know? What did we think? What did public health officials know about the spread? We knew nothing about how fast it would spread. We were fearful as heck that it would spread, but we knew if it did spread, it would be lethal as anything. And we knew that too much. The public overestimated the lethality. And remember, there was also a study that came out of Imperial College with a guy named Neil Ferguson.
Yes, who's been wrong about everything.
And he's been wrong about everything. But he said there'd be 6 million deaths in the country. And this is before there was any appreciable deaths here in the country. So were we panicking? Did we think we were all going to die? Did we think if we touched a package? My God, I wouldn't touch a newspaper. I'd go out and I have gloves on and get my newspaper and doing all this stuff. And we were wiping and putting this stuff on our hands. And that's good. It's fine to be overly concerned. But if anything, the country was overly concerned about the lethality, unknown about the rate of spread. And that's all that Trump and Fauci were trying to assess. But in the meantime, while you're waiting for this, why panic people? If it's not right to shut down the government, the best thing you can do is say, hey, be careful, watch yourself, be careful. But, hopefully, we'll be able to do business as usual.
Right.
Hopefully we will.
Well, the result.
Sorry,
I was just going to say the result of Woodward's book has been, Trump's approval rating has started to grow. So the people are basically saying we don't care. We don't want to hear any more about it. But it does beg the question why Trump gave Woodward so much access. He even encouraged members of his cabinet to speak to him.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because I think he got bad advice. Number one, he's very thin-skinned about publicity. Woodward had tried to kill him in the first one in Fear. And, of course, there's little he should have known that, that was a bust, that book was a bust. But his buddy Lindsey Graham, they say, talked him into it. Now, I know Lindsey somewhat, and he's a good guy. But he always tries to sort of, play both ends against the middle. And I'm sure he wanted to ingratiate himself with Woodward. This is my speculation, and I like Lindsey Graham. But I think he probably tried to ingratiate himself with Woodward. Woodward's got a lot of power because he can make or break people, and you don't want him coming after you. So he talked Trump into doing this. Trump, I think, thought that somehow it would help him. I don't know how he ever thought that it would help him. He's even quoted to Woodward, I think you're probably going to screw me. And in the end, you're going to write a lousy book. And he's right, was right on both counts. But why did he talk to him? It's really silly. Now I think this thing is like literary cotton candy. Richard, I've read as much as I can. I got the book in front of me, but I haven't started it. I've read everything I could about the quotes, and usually Woodward is known to really put his best stuff out there, and he's all the good stuff's out there. The Wall Street Journal did a review of it yesterday, and basically saying this was a ho-hummer, because unlike other Woodward books, he doesn't have other people really speaking on the record to any extent. It's really all about Trump, and it's really a nothing book. We've had enough. I mean, this is a president who we've heard probably more than any other president in history. Much of it to our own distraction. And we, even his supporters would say, shut up for a while. Just do your job. You're doing a good job. Just don't talk all the time. It was really silly for him to do this. It was an unforced error, as many things Trump does are unforced errors. So you just got to take the good with the bad, or the bad with the good, I should say.
All right. Well, as I say, it seems to have had little impact on the electorate. His aggregate poll numbers continue to rise. His popular or his approval rating continues to rise, and things are tightening up in the swing states. So let's move on. I wanted to get the latest your latest thoughts on the Steele dossier and where we're at with that.
Well, I just hope, you notice that one of Durham's assistants just quit on the theory that there was too much pressure to get something out too quick. That I read is this way. I think she probably quit because she's probably, I'm just guessing, is an anti-Trump partisan. Durham, unlike Mueller, does not try to staff himself with just partisans. And so I think she probably didn't want to see an indictment. So I see that as a good sign. That she quit, because it means that something's coming. So that's good. Now, what do I think? I'm looking at this, and I've been trying to study the Horowitz report more and more to see where the vulnerabilities are. And I think this guy, Joe Pienka, who was they call him the supervising special agent. And he's criticized by Horowitz. He's out here in San Francisco now. They've sort of disappeared him. So I think he's vulnerable. I think McCabe's vulnerable. I think there's a fellow named Case Agent One. I don't know who he is, that didn't report things. And he's vulnerable as well. The real question in my mind, one question, is whether somebody like Kleinsmith will roll over on anybody about what he did. Is he going to stay tough, or is he going to roll over and hope that somebody gives him mercy? I'm afraid that the support system for the anti-Trump people is stronger than the support system on the other side, and he may decide he's going to stay tough and gut it out. But I do think something's coming. I think Comey's going to escape. I think he's too high up. I think Brennan will escape because he didn't have anything to do with the FISA processes, as nasty as his conduct was. But there were so many omissions and concealments from in the FISA process that it's nauseating.
All right. How do we get a copy of Postgate?
Well, the best way to do it, Richard, is to go either on Amazon.com under Postgate or my site, postgatebook.com. What I've got on that site is I've got a number of my op-eds that tie in the dishonesty in Watergate to our present sad state of media bias and lying, really. And so you see today the chickens are coming home to roost from Watergate. This is all we've got is we've got a partisan press out there that's not telling us the truth. But it all started in Watergate. We got rid of a president on the basis of false reporting. It worked. Journalists showed how powerful they were. They can destroy a king. And that's what Woodward's trying to do today. Let me say this about Woodward's book. I think one of the things that Woodward's book does today as he's trying to destroy Trump is he reminds us that the things we are doing now, which are nice, sensible, safe things to do, even though we've got to protect ourselves, why weren't nail salons open 5 months ago? Why do we have to wait until now? It looks like, if anything, the whole society overreacted because of the fear mongering, and that what Trump did was really probably, and that as he's yelling on April 15th that we got to open up the country, the Democrats were all criticizing him. Now he looks pretty good on it. So I think you're right. Your comments about his approvals going up, I think it's precisely because of Woodward calling attention to this whole thing. Anyway, postgatebook.com would do it, and I'd love your audience to take a look at it because I think it'll inform them as to what's going on in the world today.
Always a pleasure, John. Thank you so much.
Richard, great talking to you. Take care.
Okay, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'll be back in a moment to fill you in on an upcoming episode. One tablespoon of ESS60 from C60 Evo helps keep me pain-free, energized, and mentally focused. And I'm sleeping so much better since I started taking ESS60 back in November. ESS60 is the consumable form of C60, the miracle molecule discovered by Nobel Prize-winning chemists in the 1990s. ESS60 is a mega antioxidant, 172 times more powerful than vitamin C. Check out the Paris study, a peer-reviewed scientific study online, where ESS60 suspended in olive oil was fed to rats. The rats fed ESS60 lived almost twice their normal lifespan. I can't sit here and tell you I'm going to live to be 112, but I'm 56 and I haven't felt this youthful, energized, and pain-free since I was in my 20s. ESS60 from C60 Evo. If you want to discover the benefits of this amazing miracle molecule for yourself, go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the link for c60evo.com. And don't forget to use the code RS1SPEC when ordering, and you'll receive an additional 5% off. ESS60, the miracle molecule from C60 Evo. It's changed my life. Discover what it can do for you. This product has not been evaluated by the FDA and is not intended to cure, diagnose, or cure. If you have a medical concern, please consult your healthcare provider. Coming up next time, a return visit from author-researcher Stephen Harris and our ongoing series on America's secret history and how the Deep State, the Fed, the JFK, MLK, and RFK assassinations led to Donald Trump's presidency. Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.